Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And we are back in the rugby dungeon to talk about the opening weekend of the Champions Cup and the Challenge Cup. We might kind of mention a little... No, Champions Cup.
Yeah.
I'm Tim, that's JB there.
Hello, Tim. Oh, sorry. Bonjour, Tim. Phil can fill in the rest.
I don't know why. I actually had over the weekend. Oh, there's Phil as well.
Hello, Tim. Bonjour. Salut.
Bonsoir. Actually. A couple of things I've learned. The highest density of Egg Chasers listeners is in Gloucester and Bath.
I think it's Harlequins. I am certain it's Harlequins.
Whenever I'm at the stoop, I get a lot of people coming and saying hello. But Bath and Gloucester, it was ridiculous. The number of people that did. Including after the Bath game, someone who'd obviously seen the Gloucester game the night before and came up to me on the train platform at Bath Spa station and said, excusez-moi, monsieur, parlez-vous français? I went, He went, nice one last night.
Was class.
If you didn't see it, man of the match interview. I had a producer in my ear saying, right, we've got another player coming over. It's Untermack. He's going to speak English.
Okay.
So we understood that Roman Untermack was going to speak English, so I gave my question to him, and then he went, then proceeded to give a long answer in French via his teammate translator.
And were you tempted to scrabble around looking for Lee Halfpenny?
That's the last time that happened, wasn't it? When he was playing at Toulon, and it was him and Gorgonza.
Yeah.
And Lee Halfpenny just didn't know French. Yeah. And so I asked the question to Gorgonza, who looked at me like, No. And Lee Halfpenny went, just ask the same question that I just asked him.
Slower. Lee Halfpenny definitely doesn't speak either French or Georgian.
No, but I tried to blag that I spoke French.
I thought you did speak French.
Oh, I mean, yes, I do speak French. I knew what Roman Antonmack said. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Right, big weekend of rugby. Before we get into the Champions Cup, I'd just say we're streaming right now on social media all over the place. We're at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. You need to get signed up, subscribed, and enjoy this while it lasts, while the broadband is in good nick in the UK.
Exactly right. No, it'll be in better nick.
It'll be even better.
And it'll be free. So
it'll be free.
Just like the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast.
Absolutely, JB. We are free. We are a nationalised podcast.
Indeed we are.
And what was I going to say? Oh, yeah. So we're online, follow us, subscribe, all the rest of it. But there's been a bit of news knocking around this weekend. Well, for one thing, we're going to be doing this podcast when we have the first episode of Hask in the Jungle.
Oh, yeah, he is in the jungle now, isn't he?
Yeah.
So is he the apex predator there? Is that the idea?
Who else is in there? Ian Wright's in there.
Ian, oh, my God, those two.
Caitlin Jenner.
Sorry? Is that a joke? I literally don't know.
No, I think that's right.
No.
Caitlin Jenner's in there.
No, yeah. She's not.
Yes.
No. Yeah. She is.
Yes, she is.
She is. She is strong and beautiful.
Stunning and brave.
Stunning and brave.
What?
Yes.
Why are we doing a podcast?
Right, that's it for tonight's Egg Chasers podcast. We'll be back next week. So we had a lot of people getting in touch and suggesting how we could fashion a drinking game out of Haskell. And a lot of them a lot of suggestions were around the YouTube guy. It's the greatest weekend of my life.
Yeah.
If he does any of that.
I love that.
Which Haskell tends... There was a period where Haskell was blatantly copying that
YouTube. Yeah, there was that. And a lot of them... There's a lot of Alan Partridge banter that they like to throw about.
And office banter.
And office banter. So watch out for that.
Finchie, beer, me, Stella.
Exactly.
That kind of thing, yeah. So you might get a bit of that going on. So, yeah, Matt Hardy actually said every Alan Partridge or The Office impression should be a drink.
Yeah.
And our friends at Mall Over Rugby said any Gervais or Office references should lead to that. Steph Franklin said a massive sense of humour failure over someone taking the mickey. You can imagine him getting quite hangry. I bet he eats a lot in the week, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Need a lot of protein to keep that
like a tremendous amount. I mean, he obviously talks a lot about his diet anyway.
Yeah.
But there's some videos of them in England camp and what actually they eat during the day. Mm. I mean, it's like 5,000 calories on a training day. It's huge.
Yeah, massive.
Down a drink if he mentions being a DJ or running into the post during the Six Nations. He won't mention that.
I just worry about
that's from Bruce McConaughey.
Coming from a rugby environment, which is brutal, continually brutal, all the time, just banter, banter, banter. And then going into this with a bunch of civilians.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's fragile celebs.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to get under his skin, but I think he might get under someone else's skin. And I'm not even sure he'd know he was doing it.
No, but I think he tends to come across as being very right on and woke, as well as being all about the bants as well. So I think...
Stunning and brave.
I think he'll be all right. Okay, well, and then there's lots of people saying if he mentions Richard or Judy...
Yeah, Owen Farrell is his best friend.
If he uses the phrase bin juice or gnaws...
Yeah.
I don't get bin juice. What is bin juice?
I don't know.
I did
people in the Ribble Club say it, and I'm still not with it.
I did listen to the explanation a while ago. I think it's to do with basically players that are just there to make up the numbers.
That's nice. Okay, right.
Conor O'Shea is another bit of news that's breaking today. He has left his post with Italy that we knew he was going to leave anyway, but he's left 6 months early, and he is rumoured to be taking up a role alongside Eddie Jones, working somewhere in the England setup. Exactly what I don't know.
Which would be interesting.
It seemed to suggest a new role.
Because it could be within Eddie's team, potentially, or in the same way that John Mitchell has taken up a role, or it could be in the kind of wider player development, youth team, that side of things, which obviously Connor has got interest and
a lot of
experience
of. He did a lot of work with Harlequins in developing their academy, and he's done a lot of structural things at Italian rugby to lay some foundations for them.
Have I got this right? England don't have any youth coaches at the moment.
They've just hired Jonathan Pendlebury, the Wasps Academy boss, as their under-18s coach, I believe.
Okay.
So there's one. This might be the fact that that's just happened and now the Conor O'Shea rumour's happening, it might mean it's all to do with development pathways type stuff.
Yeah, which is a very important part of the game.
But if they've now got lots of money for that, why did they get rid of the guys they had?
Hang on, have they got lots of money for that?
Well, if they now have money for that,
if you're appointing Conor O'Shea, he won't come cheap.
I don't know. I literally have no idea. I don't know. I don't know what their financial situation is. Mm. Were they in trouble if they won the World Cup? Weren't the RFE the only people not wanting England to win?
Basically, they have had some well reported financial issues, partly to do with the redevelopment of Twickenham and
the overspend
costs on that.
It, yeah.
But they are historically.
Yeah.
By far the most profitable.
So we'll see what his role is in due course.
He's a good man to have about.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd say that
great
much.
Great guy. The Steve Borthwick to Leicester rumours won't go away, and you wonder if that's going to happen. World Cup has now finished. When's that going to happen, and what role is he going to have?
So forwards coaching makes sense, and I'll tell you why it makes sense. Because at the moment, Bakewell's there. Now, Bakewell was Steve Borthwick's coach at Bath. Bakewell was also coach at Bristol at the same time that they wanted to get Borthwick in at Bristol post his role in Japan. So that would actually look like it could work. I don't think it would be a replacement. They obviously understand each other well and know each other well. So there's not...
My gut feeling is Borthwick wouldn't go to be a forwards coach only.
Oh, okay. Well...
From England,
yeah,
forwards coach.
I don't know.
Sometimes, though... these coaches,
the day-to-day, they enjoy more.
Yeah, they actually, I mean, he does love coaching lineouts. That sounds ridiculous, but he does it. He does. Like the guy who's gone back to Bath, Hatley.
Neil Hatley.
Loves coaching scrums.
Yeah, but I think his role will be bigger than scrum coach.
He probably will be.
And Neil Hatley might even be bigger than forwards coach. He might be more like kind of head coach.
Yeah. Well, we'll certainly need
to
lean on
his
experience.
I don't know exactly what the structure is there, but I imagine it's a bigger role for Neil Hatley at Bath. And I'd imagine if Steve Borthwick goes to Leicester, it will be a slightly more wide-ranging role. I don't know.
It could be a senior coach in the same way that Lancaster is a senior coach at Leinster.
But I think now coaches are in a really good position, which is you can demand a lot of money to be the thing which you enjoy doing. You might not enjoy picking the team every day, or you might not enjoy all that stuff. You might just love getting on your step ladder and measuring the height of the jumper, and that's what you might love doing.
And I think when you link this to the wider context of rugby at the minute and the salary cap story and everything else, and what some clubs are doing particularly well, is coaches are really valuable. Good, great coaches are really valuable.
They're so hard to value. I was thinking about this because I'm about to...
They're hard to value, but they're outside the salary cap.
Yes. Yeah. So I was about to put pen to paper on the situation in Leicester for later on this week. And I'm thinking about Leicester's situation. They can't throw enough money at it. They've bought in Bakewell, they've bought in Ford, they've obviously got Jordan Murphy. If Borthwick goes, there's...
Howard came in for his review.
Yeah, and it's hard to know where they're getting any value. But there again, down the road, look at what Chris Boyd's done. And we'll talk more about him later, but it's astonishing what a coach can actually bring.
The turnaround in a short space of time.
And Pat Lamb at Bristol.
Pat Lamb's a great example.
And on the other side, you might say Stuart Hooper, but it's too early to tell.
Definitely too early on that one.
Has anyone heard of Toby Booth going to Harlequins?
That was a rumour that was bubbling.
Yeah, I've heard that one.
Because Alex Codling left his role with Quins as their forwards coach.
Yeah, which is a shame. I was really hoping that he would kick on and take his success, which had Kneeling, over to Quins. So it's a bit of a shame that.
So anyway, that one's there. And there's also, I mean, do you know what? One thing, there are some ridiculous rumours flying around. I think...
Go on, give me the most ridiculous one.
The Beast going to Gloucester.
Why is that ridiculous?
Not happening. Because they've got four loose heads.
Yeah, but what's the Beast?
If it was a tight head, maybe. But there are Twitter accounts putting stories like this out. I don't know whether they're getting information from agents, but it's not coming from credible places.
I think someone might have got confused along the line there, because the rumour that I heard was Beast, and one of the explanations behind it was Balmain isn't signing a new contract. I mean, this is all nonsense. This is all hearsay. But then you realise it must be hearsay, frankly, because Balmain's a tight head.
Tight head, loose head.
Yeah. So why does he care for the Beast signs?
Yeah.
Which is, you know...
Just irrelevant.
Yeah. I don't think it's... Maybe... I mean, he is the Beast.
Well,
I mean, they had two fly halves and they signed Danny Cipriani, because he is Danny Cipriani.
This time of year, I would take any story with a huge pinch of salt. Maybe including this one as well, which is rumour George Ford... talk circling that he hasn't re-signed his contract with Leicester and
Super League.
He might be looking to go elsewhere.
Do you think he is?
I'd be surprised.
Why? I think.
Could it depend on where his dad is?
Right.
This time next
year. So I'm very glad you mentioned that. I think this is a goer. I really think this is a serious attempt.
George Ford to Leeds.
To league. And let me explain this. His brother is up in Leeds. I know they're separate organisations, but he's there. He's from the area. He can go live back in Saddleworth. He's always wanted to give league a go. If he did it for 2 years and came back, it's the start of a World Cup cycle. He's not going to miss too much. He can probably negotiate a good deal. Maybe not union-style money, but a good deal. He'd be an uncapped player.
He should go to bloody Sydney, not Saddleworth.
Yeah, but there is a little bit more money around rugby league now. Also,
a little bit, but it's still not.
Well, the owners are putting in money. I mean, what's Sonny Bill on? Eight million over 3 years?
No.
Are you sure? Are you sure? Or is it 5 years?
No, he's been given share options.
Well,
he's been given share options, but if you were given shares of
club, it'd be more like 5 million over 3 years.
If you were given shares of a rugby organisation, then on paper that might look great, but how many rugby organisations, whatever code, are making money, making a profit? Here's your dividend. Oh yes, it's nothing again.
It depends. Yeah. Well, let's not get into the debate about how you value a rugby club, but I think they are all valuable and they're all worth quite a lot. I mean, what's Leicester Tigers up for, except for an awful lot of cash? Anyway,
let's not get bogged down. Point
being, the more likely rumour on the Super League one is almost certainly Manu Tuilagi.
He's under contract though. Well, but you could do a Denny and just go, I'm retiring.
From
rugby. And by the way, have we not really made our bed for that after the Denny situation?
Denny and Johan Usen.
Yeah. So it could. I do genuinely think that, and the situation at Leicester is not helping, because those boys will think they are wasting their career if they're scrapping at the bottom of the table again.
But those two will be on big money.
I think that's a fair assumption.
Yeah, they'll be on very big money. I
think Saracens should sign George Ford as because he can slot in a backup for Faz at 10. maybe he could play a bit of 9 as well.
Well,
Wigglesworth might retire.
Yeah, and I think the nice thing about the Saracens option for him is you could always move Farrell to 12. It gives you more flexibility,
yeah,
doesn't it?
I think that's the way to go. On that one, and we're talking about money, Pro 14 have had a stake taken by CVC, it appears, or at least a rumour, a offer is on the table and looks like it could go
through. So do you know this about CVC? Do you know that the CEO of Premiership Rugby is from CVC? Do you know that?
The CEO, so they've put their...
They've put their CEO.
So presumably that would be part of the deal for that when they bought 30%.
Yeah, but get this. The old CEO of Premier Rugby now works at CVC as their rugby liaison director. So Mark McCaffrey has gone the other way.
Interesting.
And
which might have been a... You're going to have to lose your job, Mark, but I'll tell you what. We'll look after you here.
You've got
good experience, good value.
Well, I mean, it could also be like, hey, Mark, why don't you sell this deal? Because, you know, we maybe have a rugby liaison director. I don't know.
But Pro 14 look like they're in on the act as well. So that's a story that we can... get into in due course. I think we're pretty much up to date with all the other stories that are flying around, unless there's any more.
Yeah, that's everything.
No. Sonny Bill Williams, as you mentioned, he's
living in Manchester.
Toronto Wolfpack, he's going to be in Manchester, going to be near us, boys. But he's been very honest and open and said that he used to drink a lot, chase girls. And it gave him nothing but emptiness. But my big takeaway from that is Sonny Bill Williams chased women.
We have a very different perception of chase there.
Does he mean stood in a bar and just... just shooed some away and said, yeah, come on then.
Sonny Bill. Sonny Bill. Yeah, the local economy is already ticked up by about 10% this week.
Productivity's up.
Welfare within the community.
Yeah.
You know, all the key indicators for Manchester are skyrocketing.
The happiness index soaring.
You all need is a quick look of Sonny Bill and it makes your day.
Yes. Absolutely.
And the manufacturers of child size shorts.
It's huge.
Yeah. And that reminded me, the only final thing is Eddie Jones. There are excerpts from his autobiography in which he admitted he made 2 selection errors for the World Cup final.
And, more importantly, the one in Warren Gatland's book, the excerpt, is he suspected one of the Welsh team were doping. Or had been doping, right?
What was this, in Warren Gatland's book?
Yeah,
Warren
Gatland's book, yeah.
I saw from Henson, but I couldn't quite make the link. So I've not actually seen the quote
Gavin
from the
Henson
book.
Tweeted something.
Yeah.
Which was suggesting that if someone got caught, they wouldn't have been alone.
The one that I read, there might have been multiple tweets, but the one I read was basically saying, I would happily testify with a lie detector that I was not aware no one was doing what no one was doing.
Maybe I read
Gatland's
it
during Gatland's time.
Maybe I read it wrong.
Because double negative.
I wonder. Well, I don't know. I read it and went, is he saying that it was rife, or is he saying nothing happened?
I read it that he was saying nothing happened.
Right.
Okay. Did Nigel Ray write his statement?
Oh God, that's the other thing. Is it? It looks like Saracens are not going to. By the time you listen to this podcast, it might have already happened. But midnight on Monday is the deadline, and it doesn't look like they're going to
Nothing says
ask for a review.
Yeah, nothing says excess amounts of owner's money more than we'll just pay the five point three million.
Yeah, go on then.
How much?
Where's my checkbook? Come on then. 5 million is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Let's just get this done with.
Yep. Yeah. Take your medicine. That's a lot of medicine to be taking.
But that also, it just correlates with them trying to challenge the decision on the grounds of competition laws.
Mm. I wonder if
the two things, they just, is almost, you called it right, Jay, in our podcast, it's almost the smoking gun.
Yeah.
Those two elements are, for me, they're so conclusive that they're
well,
aware.
Well, and the thing is, we'll never know. No. So it's fine for us to speculate. Well, in fact, they're leaving themselves open for it.
Maybe this is part of it, because if there's a review that takes months, I don't know whether we would then learn some information.
I don't think we would.
No, not the review.
But if it's contested in court, and part of me thinks, well, I don't know, will they take this to court? I think I would. If I'm that certain, I think I'd take it to court.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure they are that certain. Well, the other angle
to think about it is, if this was hanging over them for months and months and months, if there's a point in the season where they're staring right down the barrel of relegation, which I think there will be, I think there's a very, very real possibility.
100%.
They're getting relegated. And if they're staring down the barrel, but it hasn't been confirmed or unconfirmed, how do they make plans for the following year? How do they make plans to send people on loan here or there or everywhere, which they will have to en masse?
Yeah, because they're not like a normal team in the sense that the guys they have, they're not just there for the... Well, they are just there for the money, actually. That's the whole point. But it's not like they can just clear house and start again. I mean, these are all academy products. It's all been built very carefully. It's not like the bad... it's not like they're a bad team that need a clear-up.
No, and in fact...
They need to keep everyone.
In fact, in so many ways, Saracens are the model rugby club.
Yeah.
In so many ways, they are. But they've just... On what seems like an industrial scale, they have circumnavigated the spirit of the competition. And but in so many ways, they've got all the nuts and bolts there that they might actually go, do you know what? Worst case scenario, we have to spend a year in the Championship. But if we plan it right and we've got all these nuts and bolts in place, we can come back as strong as we were.
Or stronger, because you get a lot of your big players out on loan for 12 months. You get a lot of youth gaining experience. And like the forwards, young forwards, getting the chance to play in the Championship is a great opportunity.
Yeah, the team they put out today... Well, I mean, they can...
Yeah, well, let's move into the rugby then, because what did you make of the team they put out today?
I thought it was fine. I thought the team was fine. It's to be expected with their internationals and the way they manage people. And that, you know, the team that they actually put out today, just going a little bit back to the previous point, if they shed some of the talent there, say they get rid of the skeletons of this world, they, exactly like Phil said, they would bounce back and be a bit stronger. Now, I thought that, coming back to this game, I thought the team that they picked was fine, and I thought it was a really good opportunity for those young lads to see exactly how good they are. I mean, we've seen it against Gloucester.
Yeah,
we've seen it against multiple teams now, and
they
played well, but they weren't good enough.
Yeah, and to put the selection into context, you know, Maitland was in the side, Jack Singleton was selected in the side, Ben Spencer was selected in the side. So the ones,
Reece Carey.
So
the only ones that they Titi Lamasatelli. So the only ones that weren't involved were the guys that were playing a significant role in a World Cup final.
Which I think is absolutely fine, isn't it?
Which I think that is legitimate. When Mark McCall said, no, we don't believe they're ready yet.
I think
despite the fact other clubs had their
I think
World Cup players.
Or Cruz could have played, perhaps. But no, the others have been through the mill. I mean, there's three knockout games.
And how brutal was that? The final.
Yeah,
for those boys, for Farrell, for Itoji, for Jamie George, the Vunipolas, it was absolutely brutal.
Yeah, not just the physicality; it's also the getting over the losing of the final mentally. Well, and they've been wanted by press. They've been on the Jonathan Ross show. Some of them, well, actually, to be fair, not a single Saracen went on that show. But that's not the point.
Yeah,
they'll be doing equivalent things. Yeah, it's fine. And
Sam Underhill played for Bath and was apparently like chomping at the bit. They Stuart Hooper said that they had to hold him back last week.
Good luck.
Because he wanted to play.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't fancy that job.
No.
Stopping Sam Underhill from getting out onto the park.
But there's not a lot to report on the actual game itself at Racing, beyond Racing looked really good.
Yeah.
Racing, the game breakers that they've got.
Where was that Finn Russell during the World Cup?
Yeah,
he was awesome.
Finn Russell, but Vakatawa.
Magical.
Name three more elegant, classy outside back runners than Vakatawa, Bryce Dillon, and Teddy Thomas.
Oh, those Teddy three Thomas, are, I mean,
just unreal.
You look at where you can look at a pitch and you can see the gaps, and usually you think, oh, okay, you can run there, but that gap will close. You know, Teddy Thomas is that quick and that explosive. He will get to that gap before it closes.
Yeah.
I mean, again, why did he not go to the World Cup? I keep thinking these things. All I've been thinking this weekend is, why didn't that guy go? Why didn't that guy go? Why didn't Hutchinson go? What's wrong with you?
Hutchinson, Teddy Thomas, yeah.
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 Absolutely.
Yep.
So, yeah, it was a good win for Racing.
I need to go to that stadium.
Yeah, I do as well.
I really want to go to that stadium.
Well, I mean, it could be arranged.
I'm sure we can manage it.
Yeah.
I like the fact that when Mascherano's little video when he scores points, he looks like he's been on a massive bender in his Racing suit. He's got a couple of buttons undone, his tie's right down, and he's just fist bumping in the air.
He's so cool as well.
He's so cool.
I love how they play. I mean, everyone gives the top 14 grief for being like slow and turgid and scrummy and all the rest of it. But they play with power, finesse, fitness, and the way that they break the line and then they offload. I mean, you would say it's almost like Fijian in character or classically French. It's awesome. If only the French team could play even close to that.
They've been struggling in the league.
In the league, three wins in nine.
But partly because they've had a lot of people who were missing during the World Cup. The top 14 has to start. Well, it starts at two days before the end of last season it starts.
Yes, exactly.
A broader question, because the answer may well be Racing. Which is why I ask now, but what was the most impressive performance of the weekend, in your opinion?
Clermont were ridiculous,
but in equal and opposite measures, Harlequins are also ridiculous.
Yes, very true, yeah.
So I don't really give that performance much stock. They scored 50 points.
Quins went out there and pushed Clermont quite hard in the Challenge Cup semi-final, 5 months ago, six months ago.
Yeah. Clermont was impressive performance. Exeter to go to La Rochelle.
That was massively impressive.
Bloody hell, yeah.
And to bounce back from a couple of poor performances, particularly by Exeter's standards, to do it in that manner in La Rochelle's backyard, that was impressive.
To bully a La Rochelle pack.
Yeah.
That massively impressed me.
Yeah.
Well,
and the other one was the Toulouse second half performance.
Second half. Oh my God. It's like Japan. The way the rugby they play is like Japan.
Yeah.
In club terms, it's as close as you get. But they've got a monster pack in front of them to do it.
Yeah, I'm just thinking. Toulouse at Ace.
That was cool. I met a double World Cup winner this weekend.
Double World Cup.
There's not many of them.
Yeah, no. I'm trying to think who that might be.
Osdurant.
Kano.
Yeah.
He's amazing, isn't he? Yeah, in real life.
He's just a lovely man.
I've never spoke to him. I've just been close to him.
Yeah. You've been stood in the dead ball line when he's running towards you in a captain's run.
He's got a sort of pull to him, like a presence.
He has that. He has
like
that
the moon.
He has that running style with like really high knees, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Which would be like you'd be terrified to tackle the fella. But yeah, what a lovely guy. In fact, that's one thing I love about rugby. And you meet people all the time at rugby clubs, and particularly I'm in a fortunate position where I get to meet quite a few, and they're all just great blokes. Like, you've got a double World Cup winner, couldn't be more down to earth, lovely, humble, nice. And then I think I met him briefly a couple of times, Andrew Trimble, but spent a bit of time with him. What a lovely bloke he is as well.
He comes across.
He's
as
a lovely
a
man.
Great bloke.
And he listens to the podcast.
Does he?
He went, he said, I've just put two and two together. Tim, Egg Chasers, right?
Yes, get in.
Yeah.
Did he say hello to me? Did he say hello to me via you?
So how did you start with the other two? I mean, he was quite interested in it. So you started it on your own.
Well, we broke into the studio.
Yeah. Yeah. So I said, yeah, just guys live near me, known through rugby, and yeah. Anyway.
Where you go?
But so hello, Andrew.
Hello.
Pleasure spending time with you at the weekend.
Legend, Ulster legend.
Yeah, Ulster legend. I'm at the Kingspan. Sorry, not Ravenhill. Kingspan.
Is it the Kingspan at Ravenhill or something like that?
Ravenhill, Kingspan.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Kingspan.
Kingspan. Get the I'm there branding, on Friday night. The branding right. That'll be an interesting. We'll come on to that later. Yes, we will. That is a,
how
that
was,
is
a
big task for All Star.
How was the shed this weekend? Because that was the Friday night game. I was looking forward to that all Friday.
First half, it was rocking.
It's yeah. cool there, isn't it? I mean, I say it's cool there. I've not actually been to a, I've been to a game there, I've not been to a Gloucester game there.
The first half, it was rightly rocking. Those two Joe Simpsons tries.
How is it? Right, that this wasn't meant to happen, right? Like, I thought he was old now. I thought he couldn't do this.
And what's going on with all these long-range scrum-half efforts?
Yeah, yeah.
Lately.
He's 31.
Like, Kobus Reinach has just, like, started a trend.
Yeah.
Everyone's going, hold on, we need, right, our new move, scrum-half from 80 metres out.
Yeah.
Because he was it last week, he was it last week, did it?
Papier, the disallowed.
The disallowed, and there was a...
Not last week, but Gareth Davis has
Gareth Davis all
long
the time.
History of doing that.
No, there was another one. There was last another. Week. There was another scrum half last week that scored a really long range try.
Yeah, there was. I remember because it happened. Someone had him on in fantasy. Anyway, it
wasn't me then. I had
definitely wasn't me.
Nick White, who got himself yellow carded.
Good lad,
idiot.
I had Ben Spencer, who got himself in a bloody World Cup squad and didn't play.
So. Gloucester rocking. Shame about the result, though.
And a shame to lose in the manner that they did. I think 20 points to 9 up.
I think they did well to only be within 5 points, given how little ball they had.
I agree with you,
Tim. How bad their line-out was.
Yeah.
I mean, if you just watched that and didn't see tries and stuff, you'd go, oh, they just got absolutely spanked.
Yeah. So I know I'm not...
Like 40-point... Like, if you watched it without the tries and kicks and stuff, you'd go, yeah, probably to lose by 30.
So I had a bet on... This is the only bet that I put on this week. And I put a bit of money on Gloucester... to lose to win. And then they went down by 2 scores. I was like, there is no way, looking at this game, that Toulouse can lose this. So I backed it up with another tenner. And I was like, well, it was obvious. In fact, if anything, the Simpson tries... they were so against the run of play. It just made Gloucester more nervy towards the end. Mm. I thought they were very lucky to only to be within five.
Last week against Saracens, against Saracens, their scrum creaked big time. This week they sort of sorted their scrum out a bit, and their line-out was absolutely garbage.
Interesting, wasn't it? Is it Elstad?
Elstad.
Claimed that, I knew what he's going to do because he's my best mate.
Yeah, I know Grobler well. Maybe that might have had something to do with it. And Johan Ackerman in the interview afterwards, when I put that to him, went, well, yeah, we probably should have varied a little bit more because that could have been a factor. So interesting.
Well, who was calling it?
I don't know whether Gloucester do their calls in Afrikaans, maybe. Or something. I don't know.
No one will know this. It's in Afrikaans. Yeah, I don't know. You can't really cure a bad call. No matter how good your system is, if you're throwing into traffic, it's always going to be a bit of a toss up.
Yeah, and if Toulouse have got the read on you, it's very difficult. You can't. Oh, it's very difficult.
That's astonishing. Astonishing to have your own ball stolen on a penalty on their 5 meter line.
Yeah,
but, it is what it is. Yeah, I think Toulouse look very, very good. I don't know if they look as good as Racing though from the two games that I saw.
No, Racing and Clermont, but then Toulouse. They're up there. You got three.
Those three French teams.
Very strong French teams.
And interesting, you've got three really good French teams. And again, the other French teams, I mean, I was really disappointed with La Rochelle at home.
Yeah.
Thought they were so poor.
I didn't really see that game.
Exeter were good.
Exeter, that's not to take it away from Exeter.
Exeter.
Go in there and winning like that.
Bonus point win.
That 5 point win, that's huge.
Yeah.
Lyon, I mean, just, that was one of the most disappointing performances of the weekend. Because them being top of the top 14, having dominated everyone.
Yeah.
And
having the experience of last year and going, well, we sort of shat the bed a little bit last year, we'll be different this time. They just imploded.
And the scoreline...
Again, not to take it away from Northampton.
Yeah, Northampton played well, but the scoreline actually flatters Lyon. They got the kind of two soft tries late on, the cross-field kick and the scrum with the winger going in.
I think there was a bit more to this. I mean... Let's look at Northampton and say, yeah, fair play. They played some amazing stuff. I mean, they did look great in patches. Once more, Hutchinson. That's another... we just mentioned him earlier. Why he didn't go to World Cup is just beyond me.
It's bonkers.
He might be one of the best centres in the Premiership.
Yeah, yeah.
After 18 months, he's developing
and
into...
Who did they take in the centre? Duncan Taylor, fair play. I'm glad to see him back again. But, you know, he's only just come back.
Yeah.
Chris Harris, solid player.
Yeah, good solid player.
But if you need to get a score, pull the rabbit out of a hat.
Yeah.
Or just keep scoring. Because that's what...
Or just start and play brilliantly and keep playing brilliantly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Peter Horn as well, good solid player.
I would request Gregor Townsend. Can you continue that not selecting Rory Hutchinson during the Six Nations so I can have him for my fantasy rugby draft team, please?
He is some player. So there's a bit more to this, because obviously Northampton only got the one try. I think Northampton could have got multiple other tries, but I also think that Lyon could have got multiple other tries. But they both seem to conspire to not score tries in every way possible, to the point that they would be intercepting each other's intercepts. I've never seen anything like it.
There was that period of play, wasn't there, where it was intercept, turnover, play, where Reinert, you think, oh my God, it's been like 3 or 4 minutes of solid rugby, and then Reinert gets the ball in his own 22.
And there's a little forward pass by Dan Bigger, and Reinert then rounds the fullback, which is another bit of awesome play. I mean, there was a lot of good stuff here. But they were outscored by Lyon, and you've got to say, if it was ref sided differently, maybe they were a bit more disciplined, they could put in a better performance. Ultimately, though, they are, I think they're on a record.
Lyon?
Yeah, of the longest stint in the Champions Cup without scoring a single league point.
Even over, because there was a period where the Italian sides without having to qualify.
Yeah, now the reason I think that is because last year Lyon were the first team ever to finish the pool stage with zero.
Yes, you're right. So therefore,
by
default.
Definition, yeah.
Yeah.
So every game that they lose now, they're setting a rather an enviable record.
And Carl Ferns, our mate Carl, tweeted out earlier, he just said, that was really disappointing. I've seen a stat that said we had 24 penalties.
What?
Quite how we finished as close as we did. With 24 penalties, we'll be better next week, something along those lines. But 24 pens.
Yeah.
And what's the average in, like, I think the Premiership, in a Premiership game, because I'm only saying that because I know that a bit better, I think the average penalties in a game per team is something like 8.
Yeah.
Eight would be
a solid, somewhere between 8 and 12 would be normal.
Yeah, but I would.
I think 12 would be on the high side.
It would be. If you drop down, teams have done as few as kind of 4. I think when Ireland beat the All Blacks I think it was the game that finished 15-9 or scoreline like that with a Stockdale try, that was something like 4 penalties that they gave away, which is, giving that few penalties away is huge. Anywhere approaching 20 or more is just ridiculous, just
isn't
stupid.
It? Almost impossible to win.
Now,
I like this player. I mean, I'd have to rewatch the video, but I thought the Lyon fly half looked pretty exciting.
Fernandez.
Yes. Like, every time he got the ball, he seems to make a little half break. He looked bloody quick. I'll give him that much.
I think if you were putting him into, if you had to crudely lump fly halves into categories, you'd put him in the Quade Cooper, Carlos Spencer camp.
Yes, I think so. I think that's a pretty fair comparison.
Rather than the Dan Bigger,
Priestland
kind of camp.
I was watching Dan Bigger today and I thought, I don't think there'd be a more annoying player to play against in world rugby. He's so niggly.
But those are the tens. If you had to sort of bet your mortgage on a game, and you could pick a player out of that type of pool, with the Dan Bigger, all the Dan Biggers of this world, all the Carlos Spencers of this world, you'd pick the Dan Bigger every time, particularly over a season.
Oh yeah, and in a competition like this, when you go to knockout rugby,
going back to Owen Farrell there, I just mentioned him as a joke.
I know Owen Farrell, there's...
but Owen Farrell and Dan Bigger, I think, are very similar.
Yeah, very similar. I think so.
Because he's not a very big man, Dan Bigger, but he's always like winning things off you or stealing the ball off you or just doesn't really.
Appealing,
shouting at you. And
Chris Boyd said that Dan Bigger is equal as the most competitive player he's ever coached.
I love him between those two because he said that of Dan Bigger, and Dan Bigger said, and this is a big statement bearing in mind who Dan Bigger has been working under internationally.
Yeah.
Dan Bigger said, Chris Boyd is the best coach I have ever worked under.
Wow.
And he's worked with Steve Tandy.
Rob Howley.
Yeah. I mean, that's big.
Other games. Tim, you were at the Rec.
I was at the Rec on Saturday. In fact, I you know what? Europe has some of these amazing cities that you can go to, and I've been to La Rochelle, and that's an amazing place to go and watch a rugby game. I've been to Clermont, and that you have to do that. It's like a bucket list. I've not been to Paris. I need to go to the
La Défense.
But I've got to say, Friday night in Gloucester and Saturday afternoon in Bath is as good as it gets.
It's
for me.
So cool, isn't it?
It's as good as it gets.
Yeah, we went to watch the World Cup final in Bath. Harlequins were playing Bath. Harlequins won that day. It's just an awesome town. Just a great, great town.
Yeah.
And it's because you're in the centre of the city.
Yeah.
It's so good just to roll out of the bar into the wreck, down to the wreck, and then just roll out and you're there.
Yeah.
It's so good. So I was in Glasgow this weekend, and Scotstoun is miles out of the city centre. It's
quite far. But you get to look at ships on the way.
It's a great little ground.
It's a good little ground. I enjoyed it. But from having a beer in the city centre at kind of midday, it was an hour by train to get out to the ground once you're already in Glasgow, and the same coming back.
But Bath on a crisp autumnal, bright, sunny Saturday afternoon.
Yes. We did that.
It was amazing.
A stag do we went to watch Exeter Bath. And it, like you say, it was brilliant. And also, some of the Bath players were walking to the game over that bridgey thing.
Yeah.
Well, that bridge.
Bridge.
The bridgey thing. I don't know what it is. What do you call it?
Bridge.
Are you a structural engineer, Jack?
And as for Glasgow, I've been there to watch them train. It's so weird because you've got these mega athletes, some huge men like that Brian, what's his face, when he was there.
Yeah.
Him. Huge.
Big Brian.
Huge men. And they're running around chasing tennis balls and doing that sort of thing. They were doing pre-season. And then you'll get like a bunch of school kids walking to go swimming or do whatever. Because it's still like a public community centre type thing. Leisure centre. So they just train in the leisure centre. So like their weight room, it's got like a big glass panel across it, where just members of the public walk past and they're deadlifting 300 kgs or something.
But in terms of Bath, the game was tense and had its moments. It was a bit low on quality, but it was entertaining as a spectacle. And I really like the cut of Dan McFarlane's jib at Ulster. He has a little mantra which Will Addison revealed, which is just "We fight for every inch." And Dan McFarlane was talking in the week and said, "I'm telling the guys, I want to see bite and fight." So he is aware, I think, Dan McFarlane, that we might not be playing the best rugby we're going to yet. We will get there.
Mm-hmm.
But we're a team of scrappers. And they went to Munster last week and lost narrowly.
Yeah.
But apparently, and quite unlike some of their players, they were really putting it about, a bit of niggle, trying to turn Ulster into a bit of a nasty team in a good way.
On the right side.
On the right side, yeah. Just uncompromising and annoying.
Yeah.
And to come away from Bath with a win when they didn't play great, that's a big result.
Yeah, because Ulster didn't play great, but they got enough the Cooney try and the little try.
Oh, there you go. There's Cooney was the other one. So it was two on Friday night and one breakaway scrum half try on the Saturday.
Now talking about lovely men, and I do not know this because I've not actually met him yet, but I've heard nothing other than amazing reports about John Cooney and like the stuff he does in his spare time too. He's meant to be a remarkable man.
I think basically it's the rule at Ulster: if you wear the 9 shirt, you have to be
really, really good.
Yeah. and kick sticks.
Yeah, the rules.
Almost a deity.
So you like the cut of Dan McFarlane's jib? I get that.
Yeah, I think if there were a big, I think he's quite happy at Ulster. But if there were ever a big DOR job in England, he should be considered.
What do you think of the experiment at Bath? I mean, obviously we're going to need more time, but hot takes.
I'm not exactly sure, as I kind of indicated when we mentioned Neil Hatley earlier, I'm not exactly sure what the structure is, what Hooper's role is, how that operates day to day.
He looks like a head coach to me, when you see him on the sidelines.
Yeah, because he's on the sidelines.
I don't think he does any coaching, he's never coached.
Yeah, and he's done his business side of things, business management
he's more like his kind of CEO type. I don't know.
Yeah, or more like a DOR, but like it's the management and the business side of it.
But I think they might find themselves in a Leicester Tigers style situation where they've got the guy, they've promoted him internally. Unlike Jordan Murphy, who is actually a coach, you're going to have Hooper, who is not a coach, and they're going to carry on supplementing him with more experienced coaches over and over again until they hope that they stumble upon the right mixture. I don't like it. I don't like it one bit.
Well, what I would say is, yes, I think we need more time because Neil Hatley is a very, very experienced coach.
And he does mesh better, you would say, with the Bath organisation than the other two probably mesh.
He knows it. They
know
him. Yeah. It's not an unknown quantity. He's been there and done it. But he's a very, very experienced coach. And I imagine he's only just arrived. So I would imagine the influence of Neil Hatley could be significant.
I agree.
It needs to be. The problem with Bath is, look at the names in their back line. For several years now, they've had incredible players in their back line. They just haven't got a good attack.
Well, they've got a mixture of players, haven't they? They've got basically the 2010 Wales stars, which is fine. And then outside of them, they've got world-class outside backs. And there's not really much in between it, is there?
Roberts, JJ, McConaughey, Watson, Rockandungunyi.
So you've got the world-class outside...
Thokinasinghe.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, but
they're world-class.
From 12 to 15...
So 12, they're but I'd also argue...
They are exceptional.
So I'd argue Jamie Roberts is definitely playing better at Bath than he...
He was
far more
at
Bath than Harlequins. On the other hand, though, like I say, he is the 2015 Wales team with what's his name with Rhys Priestland. I mean, I can't see you winning much with Rhys Priestland.
No, but you should be able to. What I'm saying, you should be able to get more out of that Bath backline with the raw materials you have than they have done in the last few years.
Interestingly,
that's a fact.
Yeah. If you just listed those names, and I'm just thinking aloud here, Rhys Priestland's your fly half. Who's his second distributor there? How do you unlock that talent?
Freddie Burns has been playing 15, hasn't he?
Yeah,
he won't win Anthony Watson and Thokinasinghe and McConaughey and Rocco are all available.
Which is a really bad scenario for them, right? So there's
different ways to play. That's not...
Yeah, well, if you think about this, right? So if you think about Anthony Watson at 15, you're going to have Anthony Watson move to the wing in order to accommodate a second playmaker, or you pick your most talented team, but then you don't have the necessary skills to unlock.
Do they go for a Jackson Willison type at 12 who can do that a little bit more than Jamie Roberts? I don't know.
I think that's why. What's his name is so successful there? The Kiwi lad,
Benny Tapps.
No.
Young
Englishman,
James Wilson.
Yeah, like 33 or something.
33-year-old Kiwi.
33-year-old Kiwi young Englishman James Wilson came in and was very effective there. And I think they need an extra pair of hands somewhere.
So the bit for me with Bath is they shouldn't be trying to run before they can walk. This is a new coaching setup, new management setup, and it seems to me, looking from the outside in, that they're trying to get their basics right. Their front row is performing very well.
Creaked a bit at the weekend.
Their tight five is doing well. Line out a bit of pressure on it with from Ulster, from some canny operators, but they've got to get those basics right first, and then you can start building on it. But I think for now, they just want to get the best team they possibly can on paper onto the team. So Watson at 15, JJ, Thokinasinghe.
And let's see what they can do.
Rockadaguni.
There's no excuse. Well, I just don't think there's many excuses once you give them a bit of time to settle in, because they should be able to create a solid platform with those forwards. And with that back row, they should be able to slow the opposition down. And then with that back line, and I'm not just talking about just now, and I think we will see the influence of Hatley and we will see the team develop. But over the last few years, they have massively underperformed given the names they've got.
Yeah, I think, unlike the Leicester situation, which I think is utterly hopeless, Bath's situation is better. And going back to what Phil said about the scrum, I think their front row are doing well. If Hatley comes in and actually solidifies that scrum, and gets all the forwards going in the right direction, they could turn into a really powerful, nasty team. Then it's adding the extra bits, isn't it? Like, you're gonna, at some point, they're going to have to find another playmaker. But you can win a lot of games by beating people up.
Absolutely, you can. And Jamie Roberts, if you're going to start beating people up...
Jamie Roberts is a good guy for that.
Yeah.
But, I think they're going to have to bite the bullet on either Watson or JJ, because I think they're going to need an extra distributor somewhere in that lot.
Maybe at some point. No, I don't think they'll do it just yet.
No.
Anyway,
Ulster.
Ulster looked good.
Well,
no, they didn't.
They
showed a lot of grit.
And going away in Europe and not playing well, but getting a 4-point win is really important. That is really important.
They've got to back it up with. I mean, because I can look at that and go, two English sides are done now.
They're two like, losses at home.
Bath and Gloucester, they're done.
Yeah, you can't lose at home.
Lost at home, it's kind of their competition's done.
Yeah, Ulster's route to doing this is basically get some bonus points at Claremont. They're going to have to hope to finish in that second in a good second position
for Ulster.
Yeah,
yeah.
Harlequins, looking at what I can see, they should steamroll Harlequins, home and away. Frankly, hopefully they can beat Bath away, although that's a taller order. And there's Claremont. I mean, do they have Claremont back to back, or do they have?
No, they've got Claremont this Friday.
Yeah,
at Kingspan.
I mean, yeah.
You're not going to get anything out of the Claremont game.
I wonder if you just aim for four tries. Just trying
to aim to get anything out of it.
Yeah,
aim to get one league point out of it is almost where it's going to have to be.
I'm very interested to see what the selections are for Gloucester and Bath going away. Now they've lost their home game. I predict that. I don't know. All right, so I can imagine Gloucester saying, "Right, let's rotate the squad."
I can't.
I don't think. I think it's too early.
Not a hope.
I think they will back themselves to go away.
Let's see.
Gloucester are in a winnable group. Like they, if they have pretensions of winning the Premiership, and I think that's where this group of players are. They are. We have to win this year, because certain players might not be around next year, or this is a very good Gloucester team. They have to win now. I think that has to translate into European success. They have to be. They can't be the mindset we are going to win the Premiership, but we're going to throw Europe, because that sort of team
I don't
will
mean
not
throw it. I think that they had a proper crack at Toulouse. They gave it their best shot, but I think they do recognise exactly what you just said. Yeah. Premiership is where our focus is. In contrast to Pro 14 sides, who I think go, it's all about Europe, and then we need to just keep on top of the Pro 14. The Premiership clubs, a lot of them, it's the inverse.
Yeah.
And maybe Exeter and Saracens have got to the point where they can have been a bit more different to that, but Gloucester are definitely in a place where they're like, it's Premiership. And we'll have a crack at Toulouse and see how we get on that first game.
So I think I don't look at it quite like that. I think that it's the other way around, which is Gloucester and Exeter win the Premiership because they think they can win everything. They don't look at it strategically like that. Every game that we play, we are going to win. Whereas Gloucester, if they have the attitude of, we might not go as hard in Europe to win the Premiership, like, that sort of team could not win the Premiership.
Hear me now, believe me later, Gloucester's team will have a...
I don't mind them rotating because they think it's a better team.
We'll have a rotation look about it with an eye on the Premiership the next week.
I don't think it will yet. I think they'll go full bore for this.
Where are they going for the next game? They're going to...
Either Montpellier or Connacht. I mean, if they're going to Connacht...
They're going to Montpellier.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to pick a change team.
I think they won't. I think they will go for it. We will see. We'll see.
If they don't go for it, I think they're mad. I think that's a really bad... I mean, yeah, it's bad. That would be bad.
Well, speaking of Montpellier, they went down to Connacht.
Yeah.
Bloody brilliant.
Yeah, Connacht is not an easy place to go to.
No. That's a huge win for them.
Yeah.
And made it a clean sweep for the Irish provinces.
Yes.
Annoyingly.
Who all have to qualify to get into that competition. And justified it. I mean...
Well, I mean, yeah, not every team can be as effective as Sale Sharks, can they? And go to Connacht and win. So
we had... how many Pro 14 sides won? 5 out of 6, right?
Ooh.
It was only Ospreys who lost to another Pro 14 side that lost.
Benetton.
Benetton.
But they lost to another Pro 14 side.
They lost to another Pro 14 side. So
try for your boy, Dean Budd.
Oh, excellent
so
news.
So in every game where... In every game... The maximum amount of Pro 14 winners won.
Yes, I think that's probably right.
Yeah, the two that lost.
Because the two were double headers, only one team could win. So they had 5.
Hmm.
France was kind of 3-3. 3 good, 3 bad.
Yeah.
Premiership was Exeter and Saints good. And
Saracens, Quins,
Bath, Gloucester.
Gloucester, bad.
Bad. Bad start
actually,
for the Prem.
Actually bad.
Bad.
Yeah.
Just tell me about the game.
Speaking of bad, well, I was going to go on
yeah,
to
tell, it. Yeah, tell me about your experience in Glasgow. Tell me about Glasgow.
Speaking of bad, that's not that ominous. I love the West End of Glasgow. It's great fun.
Oh, Glasgow.
You're a big fan of Glasgow, are you not, Phil?
I had a brilliant night.
Excellent.
Last night.
What was the drink du jour up in Glasgow?
I was drinking, God, what was I drinking? All sorts.
By the way, I caught a little bit of it was on telly when I was just flicking around. Dark Knight Rising was on, and there's a scene with Alfred talking about sitting in Italy, and he goes, "Do you know what, Master Bruce? I go on holiday every year to Rome, and I'll sit there in my cafe having a Fennet Branca. And I thought, yeah, that's one of your go-tos.
No Fennet Branca last night. I had quite a bit of Guinness, quite a few IPAs. I had some margaritas later on.
Margaritas are overrated,
some
I think.
Cuba Libras, some highballs.
Of course.
I drank.
Wow, that's a big old night.
I drank
already.
From. So we're on a train at 7 a.m. and I finished drinking at 6 a.m.
Oh, this morning. Shit.
This morning. It was very, very good fun. The game, on the other hand, was not particularly good. Neither team played well at all. Sale hardly fired a shot, but
were very, like, Steve Diamond was chipper after the game, really happy with the bonus point.
So it's interesting. It's really interesting. If you'd have offered them that before the game, I was there with some Sale fans, and I was talking to them about this exact point.
Which ones?
You know, Chris, Adam, the two talking about this exact point. If you offer that single bonus point in a loss away at Glasgow before the game,
with Glasgow only getting 4 points as
you'd probably say, "Yeah,
we'll take it."
That was their view, and Dimes was quite happy.
I'm astonished by that.
Now I'm astonished because of how badly they played. They barely
that
fired
might
a shot.
Be why he's going. We got away with that one. Because they can. If you think about it in terms of a reverse, they can fancy themselves going, we can go 5 points to zero or 5 points to one against Glasgow.
Yeah, but the bit that Sale will be pleased about is, so Sale did not play well at all, but they were still, they had a chance to win this game in the 80th minute. They had a couple of penalties where they got position right at the last second where a converted try would have won them the game. A game they had no right to win based on how badly they played.
Now, I obviously watch Sale more than other people.
Yeah.
My view on him, I'd be interested to see if you've got the same view, is they just don't look very cohesive.
So
they look like very good individual players all wearing the same shirts.
So their back line with, it was Luke James and Cam Redpath in the centres, they just did not get Byron or Marlon Yard into the game. They just, for whatever reason, they just could not get them into
the
game.
Yeah, I am yet to...
That was very poor. The line-out in the second half, when Acker, the angry warthog, came on. So he does a lot of good work around the park.
Yes, he does.
The line-out just went... It just fell apart. It just totally disintegrated.
So there's two things, I think, that are issues here. Number one, I have not seen any evidence yet that Cam Redpath is the second coming of Henry Slade.
Yeah,
there is nothing on tape which suggests that at all. Yeah. Whatever he is, he's not the next Henry Slade.
Who's saying he is?
Oh, loads of people have.
He's talked up. Yeah, I've heard of him talked up as it's almost the fight between England.
But
and
I know
Scotland.
He was. I know he was in the England squad, England training, wider training.
I mean,
that's
been mentioned numerous times by numerous journalists. Well, yeah. I don't know who first floated the idea, but do you want Cam Redpath to be like the Henry Slade in the outside channel? No, that's not happening. Second of all, you're right about the lineup. It does look a little bit sluggish. It looks sluggish to get in the air.
Particularly second half when Acker came
that's
on.
That's a theme of Premiership clubs this season.
Yeah.
You've had Northampton losing last week when their scrum got battered by Bath.
Mm-hmm.
You had Bath losing to Ulster and their line-out creaked. You had Gloucester's line-out being an absolute shambles, losing to Toulouse by 5 points.
Sale the same thing.
There's like...
Saracens lineout was under pressure. Very different personnel. So.
Yeah, very different personnel, and maybe this is a World Cup hangover. I don't know, but the fundamentals has been a theme this season.
I mean, maybe
so
there's only a handful of really good lineout operators out there, and maybe that's driven by the fact that the Premiership teams are so desperate for physicality. I mean, if you look at the Sale pack, and we'll move on to other packs. Like, they are all very big men. You've got the two Dupreez in there.
Yeah.
You know, big, solid guys.
Big pack this week with James Phillips and the two Dupreez boys.
I mean, that's huge.
Yeah.
And then you look at, who was the other team they mentioned? Gloucester. I mean, Gloucester went into that game with, who was the second rower who doesn't usually play
there?
Freddie Clark. Great ball carrier. Big old boy. He's not a lineup.
They don't have Slater, they don't have Mostert.
Yeah. So, you know, you need those line-out experts back in. Now, they don't make a difference on their own because line-outs are far more complex than saying, oh, I've got a really good operator.
But they do help.
And I do wonder if there's anything in this whole... I mean, it became very fashionable in the World Cup, talking about tight headlocks.
What is that? I don't think it's a thing.
I think it might be a thing.
I don't think it's a thing.
It's a thing.
I mean...
On our WhatsApp group,
former lock Nick Rouse said, yeah, it's a thing.
Former lock and forwards coach.
I'm former barbarian lock and forwards coach.
Yeah.
But the other barbarian on our group, because we've got two of them...
I've got two barbarians on our fantasy rugby draft WhatsApp group.
Yeah, it is a thing, okay... But only to props. So only props talk about it.
Okay.
So it's not. So second rows don't wander around saying I'm a tight head lock.
No, but props. But props, think props do recognise second rows, which give them a bit.
Yeah.
So and I think it doesn't just come from big lads, because there is technique involved. So Nick sort of said there are guys in the past that are massive but can be puddings at puddings.
Yeah, because they said, didn't they, in the World Cup that England lost it for the lack of selection of a tight head lock. Well, firstly, I've never heard of that. But imagine saying, hey, Maro, you're out. James Phillips, you're in. Yeah. Well, what? Because you want a tight head lock?
Eddie Jones's autobiography said he would have selected George Cruz.
No, he didn't say George Cruz.
He said Joe Marler and Henry Slade.
I said George Cruz.
Maybe that would have been the one who knows.
Definitely should have gone
Hindsight
with George
Cruz. 2020.
The only other thing I'll mention about the Sale Glasgow game was the only Glasgow try, the DTH try. Marlon, I don't know if you've seen this. Marlon Yard, what were you doing? It's a one-on-one tackle he's going to make. He drifts outside DTH van der Merwe where there's no one outside him. DTH runs in from 40 yards.
Yeah.
It was just a total misread.
I'm not... he is still trying to find his form, I think, from his knee surgery. That's my take on how he's played so far this season. He's going to need a little bit more time.
They've got options.
But it's no good needing time.
They've got Denny and Chris Ashton. Well,
one day they'll have Chris Ashton.
On the bench, wasn't he?
Yeah, he obviously came on.
Yeah.
Came on for Yard, I think.
Denny needs to get fit soon, I would say.
Mm. So, yeah, there you go. Are there any other games to cover?
Munster Ospreys, bonus
point win away at the Ospreys.
Right, Ospreys have hit, I mean, there are lows and there's lows, and Ospreys have reached a new low this week when they decided that, I guess, what do they use? Microsoft Charisma to do their team sheet. Did you see the quality of the team sheet? It was
I have seen that
horrific.
Team sheet. The formation, like the... I don't even know how to say it. Wide screen. where there's no need for it to be in a widescreen mode.
It was ridiculous. And not only that, you know, you go to some grounds. Let me give you an example. You go to Harlequins, right? And people sometimes say to you, rugby's not a professional sport, or it's got so far to go. And you go to Harlequins and you go, no, actually, do you know what? This is a bloody good, you know, this is great. This is a proper professional sport done well. And then the Ospreys do something like use paintbrush to announce their team sheet. You think, no, they are right. They are right. It's got miles to go. What were they thinking?
It is awful.
It is dreadful.
But in the week where they lost at home to the Kings, they also lost a bonus point win for Munster. This game, one of the few things out of it, it's put on my radar, Luke Price. Do you know Luke Price?
Nope.
He is the professional rugby player who looks least like a professional rugby player.
Crikey, that's a big shout.
More so than Thomas Waldrum?
Way more so.
Luke Price,
Ospreys, does not look like a professional rugby player.
But like, I'm trying to work out.
Goodness me, you're not wrong.
He kicked his
what position? What position?
Fly half.
Never heard of the guy. Is he any good?
He's playing for the Ospreys.
He's re-signed.
Oh, I've seen him play a couple of times.
Any good?
Yeah, he's pretty handy.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because a lot of lads, you know, in those interviews, and they go, hey, who's the most skillful player that you've ever played with, and so on and so forth. They picked the lad that's now at Dragons, whose name escapes me.
Jared Davis.
Sam Davis.
Ah, right.
God knows what's happened to Sam Davis. I mean, going to the Dragons to, you know, slowly finish off your career at age 22. yeah, it was weird. So now they're starting with him. There's also a theory that...
Anscombe might never play a game for Ospreys.
After his black blood transplant.
He's gonna Thomas Croft it. Get back for the big tools.
Yeah. So all that, or move to the Premiership is the other one.
Mm.
So anyway, there you go. Yeah. So the Ospreys are basically accumulating all of these internationals, which will never play for the Ospreys. So the actual Ospreys product that they put on the field is nothing like as good as they could potentially be. You hardly ever see Alan Wynne-Jones.
When you say put them on the field, what do you mean? Because European Cup, you'd imagine that
they would go on the field for European Cup.
And they will do. Well, maybe not now. They've lost the first game. This is what's amazing about this competition is, I'd say Ospreys lost at home. They're probably looking at it and go, well, we'll give as good an account of ourselves as we can, but they wouldn't say this, obviously, but they might be thinking, legitimately, it's done.
Well, they might have actually thought it before the game, yes. Legitimately, for the Ospreys.
No professional outfit would have had that thought before the game, but...
Yeah.
It's interesting. And Leinster, we didn't mention as well, who pretty routine 5-point win against Benetton.
GB's beloved Benetton.
Rallied at the end.
Yeah, shame that one. But
they've been playing some good stuff this year, Leinster.
So Benetton.
And with... They had a few of their... Ringrose got a hat-trick. Yeah. Sexton was back. But they've been managing their World Cup players, shall we say.
Yes. Excellent. One game from the other competition.
Challenge Cup.
That one.
Worcester playing in an empty stadium.
Yeah.
What, an actual empty stadium?
In Annecy.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, it wasn't in the... They'd moved the game, haven't they? As in, I read something saying that the stadium they played in was actually closer to Worcester than its home location.
What?
The club's home location. Yeah. They're from...
Are these quirks of geography.
The team that they were playing, NSI, are... I think they're located, like, east of Pakistan. They're that far across...
Russia, yeah, Siberia.
Siberia,
isn't it?
Yeah. But they were playing in Western Russia, or a more Western part of Russia.
As I mentioned many, many a time, I think that was AJ McGinty's debut.
In the minus 30
yeah,
game.
Yeah, or it was like two or three games into his professional rugby
as
career.
As an aside, I think that Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell are consulting with Worcester on their broadband.
Oh, really?
I thought they've gone to do a... I think they made the announcement at the Worcester Academy House.
Sorry. I thought you were going to say that they were consulting with NSI about Gulag construction. But okay, fair enough. Either or.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What is one for you? What is today the anniversary of? What rugby game was it 1 year ago? Because it would have been Autumn Internationals.
Well, yeah.
It was a very... We thought at the time a very significant moment.
England All Blacks?
No. It was Ireland beating the All Blacks.
Ah.
1 year today.
It was significant,
to the day,
it turns out.
Yeah.
When it was 16-9 or something, they beat them.
Yeah, is it that? With
it
the Stockers.
At the Aviva.
With the Stockers try, four penalties.
By the way, I didn't mention it with the Bath Ulster game earlier, but Stockers' last second intervention was... Well, it was a worldie of a moment.
It was. I've got a question for you.
It was incredible.
What happened to Zach Mercer? He gets absolutely smashed, doesn't it? It's innocuous, actually.
He goes on the floor and holds his head.
Because Cooney didn't wrap an arm.
We haven't seen any close-up shots because...
I thought he was genuinely injured.
Yeah.
We haven't seen any close-up shots because it didn't go to the TMO. Referee didn't look at it. Zach Mercer goes down on the floor and puts his hands on his head. I think because he's gone, I just ballsed up the pass.
Yeah, I should have shown.
I should have kept hold of the ball. We've just lost the game when we could have won it at the death.
He looked slow as well. He didn't look like Zach Mercer.
Oh, I don't know. He was pretty athletic to reach up and grab that ball.
Oh yeah, yeah. But then I thought, you know, Zach Mercer in space, one man's a beat, all day going to be a try.
Underfoot is very heavy.
Yeah, maybe it was that then. But he didn't look as fast as
particularly in the corners. So yeah, potentially. But so no, I'm. Having not seen a close-up shot, because there weren't any, because the TNO didn't go to the TMO, I don't think you can say Cooney shoulder charged him. I think it was actually legitimate. He was trying to pull out of the tackle because Mercer had passed it. I don't think Mercer goes down. And I was stood by the Bath bench at the time, and no one from the Bath bench.
There were no
remonstrations. No one in the crowd was saying, what's going on? No one said for hours after the game. And it was only when the video highlight was put up on the BT Sport Twitter thing that some people started going, hold on.
Yeah.
He shoulder checks him.
Exactly what I saw. I didn't see the shoulder check. I was more worried about the injury.
The Mercer goes down.
He looks like he isn't unconscious, but no. he's prone.
I think he's just going, we just lost the game, damn it.
He's okay, though.
I think he's okay. And we shouldn't take away from the unbelievable bit of skill from Stockers.
Yeah.
Because
what
I found brilliant was...
commitment rather than skill, isn't it?
The commitment, but also the communication, because Stockers was running back alongside Mercer, and you can see Stockers going, John Cooney, like, your man. And he stayed on Rocco when the instinct that close to your line would have been to go for for Mercer, but he trusted John Cooney and he stayed on Rocco and got there and intercepted
the ball.
What
was the thing that Dan McFarlane was saying? He wants him to turn into what?
Fight and bite.
There you go then.
He had a huge amount of distance to catch up as well, because he'd shot out of the line as the miss pass goes across.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it was very impressive.
So the one I want to talk about very, very briefly, because I didn't see the game, but I think it's worthy of note, is Bristol Bears started a 19-year-old...
Johan Lloyd.
However you say his first name.
Johan.
I Lloyd played. and apparently ran through most of the Zebra team for his own score.
Did he score 22 points or something
like that? Yeah, something ridiculous.
Yeah.
This kid is legit, isn't he?
He seems to be quite good.
The greatest player of a generation. England starting fly half for the 2019 World Cup.
With their, again, you know, just like George Ford, I think with their development skills, he should go to Saracens. He could really do something if he goes to Saracens.
Yeah, he can make something of himself.
No, he looks the real deal, this kid.
Yeah, so this is how it looks. It's Lloyd conversion, try, Lloyd conversion, and then literally, just look at this. I'll show you the scoring charts here. Lloyd. It's just dominated by the kid.
Fair play.
Very, very exciting.
And they have rugby ball-shaped pies.
Do they?
Well, I put a picture from one of our, again, another someone else on our Fantasy Rugby Draft WhatsApp group.
Not quite as storied as the other two.
No, not as storied, but I think same position, actually. Lock.
Good question, don't know.
Utility player,
anyway. Yeah. He sent us a picture of his pie and mash, and they have rugby-shaped...
Utility joker.
They have rugby ball-shaped pies.
Oh, I did have, in the Glasgow Stadium, I had, I think it was black pudding and haggis sausage roll that was very, very good.
Lovely.
Oh. That was nice. Yeah.
They've quite a good coffee
culture
truck in that ground, I believe.
Yeah, I didn't have any coffee. I had a few Guinnesses in the ground.
Well, yeah, I suppose you would have done. Quite often I'm working. But I know that the grounds, that Saracens have a really good coffee truck. Mm-hmm. Might even be Tiki Tonga coffee.
Yeah, it would be. Absolutely.
I think Dave Seymour has his truck at Sale. I've not seen that for a little while, though.
I do like a good coffee. I do like a good coffee before I work at the rugby.
Nice double espresso.
And Bath, as you can imagine, have a good coffee.
Oh,
truck.
I can only imagine.
Yeah. Coffee with the boys.
Yeah.
Next week's games?
Let's get on to next week's games.
Let's do it. So, Tim, Friday night, you're there.
I'm so excited about it. I love that place. Friday night in Kingzone was brilliant. That's a great place to be. Friday night in Belfast is awesome.
And this will be a very important game.
Yes.
And there's actually some form here. So, Ulster beat Claremont in an absolute epic 39-32 encounter in the 2016, 2015-16, I think.
Good memory.
It was. I looked it up before the pod. Because I was like, oh yeah, I remember that game.
Never admit you look things up before the pod. Just pretend that it's off the cuff.
Oh yeah, photographic memory. Remember every detail. Pietau was playing back then. Absolute epic game. I hope it's as good as that. I hope the result's as good as that. I hope the performance is as good as that. Mm. It won't be, unfortunately. I can't see it.
Difficult, isn't it? They're so good.
French teams don't travel away very well, though. So.
True. They're just so powerful. When you're watching, oh my God, Rekha and Yato. Did you see the Yato?
I saw the Yato kick.
The Yato kick.
The air kick.
Not very good.
Which, with Hugo Monier, you can just hear him giggling in the commentary box.
The Yato kick, not good. He should never, ever kick, ever, because his try was... His second try.
Wow.
The pace and the power, actually both of his tries, is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
Just unreal. So, I think we're going to struggle with that.
Soft them. I'm inclined to agree with you, pure because Ulster did not play...
No.
Not put their best foot forward.
No.
But they are building something there.
Yeah.
The problem for them is they had two front five forwards go off injured against Bath.
Ooh.
Jack McGrath, don't know the extent of that injury, and Carter in the second row looked like he dislocated his shoulder.
Carter's
so.
Shoulder did look bad.
So they could be stretched already.
Mm.
And that's where you don't want to be stretched against Claremont.
No, not at all.
So I think I'm inclined to agree with you that it'll be a Claremont win.
Yes. Then Saturday, so if we go pool by pool, pool one. We've got JB's beloved Benetton hosting Northampton Saints. How do you reckon the free-flowing Northampton style will suit Benetton?
Tough to say.
Are Benetton big up front? Because that's the way you can really beat Northampton is by taking them on.
Big up front.
As Bath did.
I think Northampton will win this. Leicester. Lol. Exeter are favourites at the moment to win the Premiership. Does everyone agree on that?
Yes.
It's going to be one hell of a team that stops them.
Yes,
I agree. Even though in the Premiership they've not played particularly well. But yes, I agree.
Second favourites has to be Northampton for me.
I think they're too lightweight.
I think it's early to say
too
now.
Too inexperienced in the pack.
But it's tough because you look around and...
It's Gloucester and Northampton, right?
I'd say Gloucester.
Gloucester for me.
When they click... We talked about this last week. And there are a lot of sides that you can't judge yet because they've not clicked. Sippers is not firing.
Yeah.
When Sippers has got Willie Hines back and when Gloucester have got Mostert back.
Yeah, but have you got Willie back. Hines back? No one's scoring tries for them.
No one's scoring tries for 50 yards.
I mean, Simpson also got the one against Wasps. He got one week after.
Yeah, but
you get two against Wasps, actually.
Gloucester, in a very Saracens-esque way, are a pressure team, aren't they? They play intelligently with two halfbacks that can kick really well. And then they'll just squeeze you with a big old pack. And I think Gloucester haven't clicked yet, so I'd put them second favourites.
Bearing in mind
that Saracens are probably going to go down or close to it.
I would do the same, but actually more going on my perceptions going into the season rather than what I've seen so far in the season.
I would say Gloucester have failed a lot of big tests. As it's got serious, you know, they should have put Saracens to the sword. They should have finished off the
year that Exeter eventually won the Premiership. They lost nine in a row early in the season.
Was that Prem Cup included, though?
They lost, I remember the ninth defeat or something like that was at the Kingspan against Ulster. And I interviewed Rob Baxter afterwards and he seemed broken, but was kind of like, no, you know, it's not good enough.
Trust our systems.
But we'll be back.
Yep, just system.
So you don't win anything normally till May. But you don't win anything till July.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Or the end of June or
that's
whenever
a good
it
point.
Is.
I just say that Northampton, every time the task has got bigger, they've basically met it.
That will play into their hands, though, the fact that there'll be a lot of rugby in spring and verging on summer. That will help Northampton.
Big time. And this apparently this Matt Proctor fella's going to be fairly good. Is it Matt Proctor?
Matt Proctor. Yeah. He's not bad, you know.
Can he play a bit?
He's played for the All Blacks, so he'll be all right.
Reasonable, yeah.
For the Kane. Utility back, so he can play 15, 13, 12, wing.
Who put him up in fantasy rugby?
Brin. I've been eyeing him for a few weeks.
Was he outside back, though?
He is an outside back.
Oh, is he?
Right.
Keep him.
Whatever, don't need him. Yeah. If he was a centre, damn it.
So, Brin needs all the help he can get right now.
He does.
So the answer to that is... The answer to your question is I back the second favourites for the Premiership over my beloved Benetton boys.
Right.
Yes. Me too.
And me three.
Then we've got, this will be interesting, Lyon hosting Leinster.
Leon hosting Leinster. Leon, give me Leon.
They have to win, but they won't win.
Yeah, give me Leinster.
And then another, and then the season is over for Leon again, and they'll probably start going, well, we're doing well in the top 14, let's turn our attention there and throw the towel in Europe.
But they really want to win. This is not a joke.
They want to win
a
game in
Europe. Really want to win a game. Like, they targeted Glasgow away to win, because in their minds, we'd be the first, they thought they were history-making. They'd be the first team, the first Leon team, they're very proud of this, to have stayed up back-to-back seasons. That's not his first milestone. They're unbelievably proud of that. They'd be the first Leon team to win a game in Europe, and they really want to win. So, like,
and they've not even got a point yet.
They've not got a point. And I've backed them to win every game that they've played so far. Every single game. So they're definitely going to beat Leinster.
The JB curse. Yeah.
Hear me now, believe me later.
They're it's really quick and easy to get from Manchester to Leon. Really cheap.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Food capital of France.
Yeah, it might be amazing for food.
Oh, actually, when you're off to Belfast, I'll recommend you a restaurant. No, I won't. Will.
I'd love to, but I am flying in, going to the game, then I'm driving to... We're on a minibus to Dublin, staying in Dublin, because then in the morning we're up and driving to Limerick.
Oh, wow.
Ooh.
I know, it's a bit of an ugly trip, but, you know, good company.
Yeah.
Who's in your bus?
Oh, just everyone that's there on the team.
Can you give us some names? Go on. Who's in the bus?
I don't know if I can, actually. I don't
you can't,
know.
You can't give us bus names?
We're just people. John. Okay. Steve.
John's there.
All right. Who'll be on comms?
Actually, I genuinely don't know.
Okay, who's your favourite person to be in the bus with that our listeners will know? Who keeps you entertained?
On other bus journeys.
On other bus on a hypothetical bus journey with all the people that you've been on a bus with.
Flats, Ugo, Nick, Ali.
Do you like them all equally? Do they all bring different things?
They all bring different things, and I keep myself to myself on bus trips and stuff. But I like the calming and very relaxing, relaxing and entertaining company of Nick Mullins.
He
gave me a lift from Gloucester to Bath, and
I got a taxi with Nick once, and I can say it was delightful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought you were going to give me some rubbish answer, like, yeah, I just take every bus journey one at a time.
Genuinely one of my highlights of my life is in Philadelphia.
Yeah, exactly.
The two of us, Nick and Lauren,
mm-hmm.
Driving from the game into the centre of Philadelphia to go and have a few beers with the teams.
Yeah.
And Nick Mullins said to me, this is so weird. I'm listening to your voice, Phil from Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, and you're actually sat next to me. Yeah. I'm like, it's weird for you. Yeah. How weird do you think it is for me, Nick Mullins?
Yeah.
World Cup final commentator.
Yeah. We were hearing the nuances of commentating on diving, which is great.
Yeah.
Awesome, in fact.
Nick can make anything sound incredible.
Do you know, as a commentator, do you know what the best thing about Nick Mullins is, and why he's got to the very top of his craft, is because he knows when to say nothing.
Mm. Mm. I wish I learnt that skill.
So does everyone else. No,
right, next game. Pool 2, Exeter versus Glasgow.
Exeter. How can you not pick Exeter?
I think
that's
Exeter.
Great storyline, this one. That's brilliant. Great storyline.
Yeah. Hoggy, but I think Exeter will do this. Then we've got Quinns Bath, an all premiership.
Ooh, who's going to lose this is the question. Who's going to find a way to successfully lose this game?
There is. It's the hope that kills you. So at least the loser can kind of acknowledge, well,
it's done.
It's done. But I think for both teams, it's already done.
It probably is.
I would say Bath win this. Looking at these two teams, I think Bath can beat Quinns. If Bath beat Quinns, I'm then putting Quinns in the same bin as Leicester. They are going to go in the Leicester bin.
They're in trouble at the minute.
Big time.
They are. But then, I said it last week, I'm not going to go into it again, but personnel-wise,
there's one good thing about Quinns.
They're chopping and changing so much.
Yeah, which is...
There's only one good thing about Quinns, and that's Ibatoya.
Ibatoya's
class. Who has beat more players... than any other player in the top, in the top league. So
that
more...
run to set up the try for...
I can't believe he gave the pass. I mean, I didn't
Lang.
Really...
For Lang was insane.
Yeah. The boy is awesome, isn't he?
I mean, if I was the Buffalo Bills, I'd be going, here, have Christian Wade. We want him to
yeah. I thought that. It was like a running back, wasn't it? Yeah. Change direction, yeah. Behind the hole. Yeah.
It was insane.
And if you have him in fantasy rugby, I do, obviously. Thank you, Alex Shaw. Yeah, you're doing all right.
What round did you pick him up in?
Quite late.
Fourth or fifth. Yeah. I had a list of.
Was it that early?
Yeah, because I had him down. I had him, but like I thought, if he's around in round 7 or 8 or 9, I'll have him.
I would have gone at that stage
because Mercer went. I got him instead of Mercer because Mercer went. Mercer was on my list, but then I got Ben Earl.
What? Early.
Which, brilliant. Again, you didn't know he was going to be as good as he was. No,
I had a good idea. I had a pretty good idea.
I had both of those two.
He's looking in good
season.
Shape, Ben Earl.
Oh, he's so powerful,
he's
isn't
got
he?
Really big this year.
Yeah,
he's very, very fast.
His collision with Camille Schatt in the game was massive.
Yeah, weirdly came off second best though.
He did come off second best.
Good initial. I hate that when you make a good initial
a
hit.
Massive
you don't...
collision, yeah. And then he ends up on the floor.
Camille Schatt is a
Camille
freak.
Is still going.
He is a freak.
If I was, I've said this before. If I was drug testing, I'm definitely not saying he is on drugs. I'm not saying that. I'm 100% not saying that.
But if you said you've only got a limited number of
tests,
and you just need to, you know nothing about the players, it can't be random. You've got to pick.
Yeah, if that's profile.
That
man.
How did he get that neck?
Yeah, that man. Look
just
at him.
Just a
now.
Lot of weights.
In the same
clearly.
Way that the HMRC can't investigate everybody. So they've got to use like intelligence-led, tips.
And your intelligence is your eyes going, that guy looks like he's a Marvel comic book hero.
That's interesting. Get me his urine sample.
Yeah. next game.
A lot of hard work Camille Schatt's put in.
Yes, a lot.
Years.
Absolutely. Next game is Pool 4. Saracens host Ospreys.
Saracens.
It will be interesting to see how they freshen up their team, whether they do introduce a few of the England boys.
I think they threw them all in.
I don't know, just because the Premiership, they are not going to win Europe this year. They are going to save them. I think they'll throw a few in, but if anyone's carrying niggles like Farrell or Itoji...
Here's how I think about this, right? If they are...
Saracens have written off Europe already.
Yeah.
100%.
Do you actually think that?
100%.
I don't think that.
I believe they have.
I don't think it's in their DNA to write things off. I think they'll fight on every front.
They're 35 points.
22.
Well, now?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's only with the points they've gained back.
They'll catch them.
But how many points are they behind 11th? That's all you need. That's the number you need.
I have.
How many points are they behind 11th?
Give me 1 second.
With 18 games to go.
26.
26 points behind. So with the league as it is, I think this is going to be a higher points tally. Gets relegated than last year.
Yeah, and last
when
year was high.
Was unusually high. It was 31 or something.
Has the league been updated yet?
No, it depends what table you're looking at. But
Midnight one. Tomorrow night, the table will read Saracens 12th.
Yeah.
26 points behind. So Saracens are minus 26. No, minus 22.
26 behind.
Yeah, but they're minus 22, and they're going to have to get to plus 40 something, I think.
Probably, yeah.
To survive.
Mid to late 30s. So you've got to have a. Yeah,
so they're going to have
60 point swing from where they are now.
And 18 games to 60 point. 80 can't fill maths. Yeah. What's an average points per game? 60 into.
Oh, I've got a question.
Over three. Three and a bit.
So you've got to average over 3 points a game.
If you were Saracens, right, would you prefer to take a 35 point reduction? Or would you prefer to have a 15-point reduction at the start of every game?
I'd probably take the 15-point reduction.
I'd take the 50. I think they'd back themselves to win enough of those games.
20-point reduction?
Ooh, now you...
I think that'd be more interesting, actually. That's what they should do.
That'd be fascinating.
I think they would back themselves to beat half the table twice with a 20-point reduction. And each game. So
can we play Northampton every week?
Yeah. They would back themselves.
They always beat them by 50.
I bet they would back themselves to win half the games.
Now,
with that, they'd win 11 games and would definitely be safe.
At the risk of sounding like an even evangelical Christian, these things are sent to test us.
At the risk of sounding like Israel Folau, no.
Yeah. Oh yes.
Let's not go there.
Let's wrap this up.
Yeah.
Quick.
I've not had much sleep.
That's why I think that Saracens will go full on. It's in their DNA.
They've written off Europe already, but anyway, we will see.
Yeah, we will. It'll be interesting to see. So everyone's saying Saracens in that, almost regardless what team they put out. Then this is a big game for potentially the winner of Pool 4, Munster hosting Racing 92.
I'm so excited about this one.
That will be a very good game. 5:30 on Saturday.
Live on BT Sport.
Racing.
Give me Munster.
And if there's any
home.
French translation needed with the Racing players, I'm there.
Perfect.
That's why they've sent me.
It's ideal.
Did you see the Conway gas for his try?
Yeah. In this game? I didn't know he had that in him.
Yeah, he scored some good tries, but I didn't think he was that fast. It was awesome.
I actually think Munster at home might sneak it.
I think Munster.
Racing.
Then we've got Pool 5, Toulouse host Connacht.
Toulouse.
Now, Connacht did go to Toulouse and
win. Sale Sharks have won it at Toulouse.
There you go.
Not this Toulouse.
Yeah, not this
time. Yeah, agreed.
I think Toulouse, comfortable.
And they've still got Dupont and Colby to come back into their back line.
Actually, did Sale Sharks win there, or did Gaskell just score a one-off amazing try?
I don't know.
Gaskell picked up the ball. I think the ball squirted out the tunnel. Gaskell picked it up and just ran the length of the field.
Gaskell was one of those guys. That was, I remember when Thomas Croft burst on the scene and then Lewis Moody burst on the scene.
Yeah, he was that guy.
You had these kind of back row guys that just had this unreal gas.
Rangy, yeah.
Rangy, incredible speed, looked like a modern athlete. Gaskell was one of those as well.
Yeah, he hasn't done so well since going to Wasps. I mean, he's no longer spoken about in England circles.
But he's had a lot of injuries.
Yeah,
he's a solid
well,
yeah,
just he's not as good as maybe.
Just, no, he hasn't.
Maybe the atmosphere is not as good there.
He hasn't fulfilled.
Not old school enough.
I don't know.
Fulfilled the attention, the potential that he
Steve Diamond gave him.
Because didn't he got picked for England aged like 20? Didn't he?
He was certainly
he got a cap or two.
He's certainly in and around the conversation.
Oh, yeah, he was like Chris.
Did he play England XV?
Oh yeah, maybe yeah.
Like, no, he was definitely in the conversation. He was captaining Sale at the time.
Yeah,
and he was like 12. So yeah, he was definitely in the conversation and didn't really kick on at Wasps.
Nope.
A lot of them didn't. And maybe you learn your lesson.
What? Premiership runners up?
Didn't win it.
No,
England. England. So they're all meant to go to England, weren't they? Tommy Taylor was going to be in there for England. And
Tommy Taylor didn't go to Wasps because he said
Danny Cipriani's
going
to go
to England.
Yes, he absolutely did. He absolutely did. He thought his England chances would be increased, as did Gaskell, as did Cipriani.
I think that's propaganda.
I'm buying it.
Because if
sounds right to me.
If coaches wouldn't pick players because they were at Sale or Newcastle, let's say, then
Leicester Tigers have four England players.
They deserve
more. Leicester Tigers.
They deserve because they're amazing players.
Yeah.
Like Johnny May would be a contender for a World 15.
Six players.
Johnny May would be a contender for a World 15, but you're going, well, they finished 11th in the league last year, so he probably shouldn't be playing.
I'm just saying clubs matter, and they do matter.
Speaking of clubs that matter, the two Sunday games, the first one in Pool 2 is Sale hosting La Rochelle.
A game I will go to.
Sale will win.
Anyone else fancy against this?
I'll be on a plane back from Limerick.
I'm sure I've got something on next week. Oh, I'll be coming back from London.
Washing your hair.
I'm in London on
Saturday. Why would you wash your hair when Sale play?
Saturday.
Oh, I'll definitely go to this. This will be good. And I'm looking forward to watching Danny Priso in the flesh.
Mm. And again, La Rochelle, I think, will go, right, that's done then. We're cooked.
Lavani
Boss. This is a must-win game for them.
Yeah, it is. For both teams.
This is
a must-win. Seeing Lavani Bottia and Victor Vito. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to this.
And then...
And Ratier, they've got some really good outside backs.
Yeah.
La Rochelle. Anyway.
Is it Ratez?
Ratez.
Yeah. Last one, Montpellier, Gloucester.
Yeah. Montpellier.
Must win.
Just too big, aren't they?
It's going to be Montpellier. And because, as I've said, Gloucester will send a...
Changed, refreshed team.
I'm
not so sure, but we will see. I still think Montpellier will win anyway.
Why don't we finish this off with a subject that we love talking about? Israel Folau's back in the news.
Thank goodness.
Oh, I thought it was going to be a boring news week, but Israel Folau, like a gift from heaven.
I don't... Can I just... like a broader point. One thing I've seen so much of on Twitter particularly is the worst for it, is people giving oxygen to stories that they hate. So a great example was Will Carling. There was one from the Daily Mail about how England's World Cup players were spoiled because they took their medals off.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, but I'm so glad you mentioned this, right?
A total bullshit story and a total bullshit article that deserved... no attention whatsoever.
Yeah.
And what did everyone on Twitter do? To score some kind of virtue points or something? I don't know. Let me take it in good faith. To highlight how bad they think it is. But all Will Carling and Brian Moore and all these tons of other people who retweeted this article and said, look how bad this article is, gave it literally thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of clicks.
Of clicks. Which is exactly what the article...
Which is exactly what the article wants, which is how they fund themselves, yeah. Which means the boss is going to go...
More of that,
more of that, because that got us money.
I have a question, right?
So stop doing it.
I definitely understand why they think it's disrespectful. That medal's meant to be precious. Do we agree on that? It is meant to be precious, right? I understand why you take it off, but I also understand... No.
Gold medal is precious.
Bear with me here. Right, so the idea is the medal is precious. It's disrespecting it to give it, you know, to take it off or not wear it. I mean, I assume that they kept it. Any views on Sonny Bill Williams giving away his medal to a child? Why is that not that is disrespectful, right?
Yeah,
along the same lines.
I think a player is allowed to
do what he wants with his damn medal. He earns
it. Shake the hand. Take it in his hand or have it put round his neck and frisbee it's up to him and it's no one
Kick
else's
it.
Business.
Absolutely. Throw it in a hedge. Absolutely. Throw it in a hedge in Sedgwick Park.
And what happened to understand, what I have heard as well is Owen Farrell, who was one of the people that was taught by this article, was like, what a spoiled child, and a load of people were criticising. He was apparently the last one back into the changing rooms because he was out signing autographs for flipping ages. He was just gutted. He's just lost the World Cup final.
That is the most important thing. They have worked their whole professional sport in life. I've been working up to that moment. The last 6 months, the last 4 years, has been working specifically for that moment. And to fall up short in the manner that they did, whether they're putting the medal around their neck or not, is the last thing on their mind.
True.
As I say, point being, stop fanning the flames of bullshit stories. So again, with Israel Folau, ignore him. But what's everyone on Rugby Twitter already done? Yeah. They've started talking about Israel Folau again. Don't give him any flipping oxygen.
I gotta say, I do enjoy Israel Folau an awful lot. I can't get enough of it. I mean, it is undeniable that turning your back on God would cause bushfires. I get that.
Well, I'm not saying that correlation is causation, but in this case, I think we've got enough evidence.
I think
you can't prove he's wrong.
There are less people going to church.
That's why he'll keep believing it.
Exactly. So
Let him believe it on his own, in his own little church with his own congregation that choose to be there. Someone's gone in, filmed it, and spread it outside. Who cares?
Well, this is amazing.
A little tiny church in Australia, which I gather is like his parents'
church,
like something in their back garden or something. It's like 20 people. Who cares?
Quite amusingly, you know, people do say stupid things at the altar of religion. For instance, Stuart Bourne's hope for a typhoon to cancel some matches. He got one and 8 people died.
30 people died.
Oh, 30 people died. Must have been delighted. So, you know, people say these things. Stuart Bourne believes that typhoons will... having typhoons will solve climate change and Israel Folau.
I didn't see what you're referring to, so I can't speak to the veracity of it, but if
Times podcast,
if anything like that was said, then I would advocate ignoring that as well.
Yes. Times podcast, he said, I just hope that there's a typhoon serious enough to cancel games. Now, I don't know what you expect a typhoon serious enough to cancel a World Rugby Cup game looks like, but it's probably life threatening. He did caveat, but hurts nobody. I don't know how you balance those two statements.
Just enough to cancel all the games, but no one.
But look, if you worship at the at the religious altar of wokeness and Greta Thunberg, things happen. You know, things happen. So they're both equally as mad, and I enjoy reading both of their content for their insane ideas.
So, if you want to read and enjoy the ridiculousness that Israel Folau, that's fine. Just don't share it and talk about it. Just let it go away. Let it go away.
Yes.
And then what anyone thinks in the privacy of their own house...
Well, I won't be turning my back on God, Tim.
Church, whatever. I don't care.
It's not worth the risk.
It's not why risk it? Why risk it? For a couple of prayers a day. It's just not worth it, is it?
You're right.
On that note...
Yes.
Yep, let's leave it there. See you next week.
I want to go to bed.
Yes. Let the boys play.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.